Steve, so just a quick little thing, I suppose, just so we both have like a bit of an understanding. Do the same thing, just the intro. Okay, and then we'll go into, obviously go straight into the Wallabies England result.
Yeah.
Just like how it's gutting. Chequers stepping down or the blow up between Ray Lee, unless you really want to.
I just reckon it'll come up in the tweets, that's all.
Yeah.
Probably got to talk about it at some stage, but I don't think we need to make a point of it. A question will come through to us.
Yeah, anyway, just talk about what you thought about the game. Or like we can liken it, you know, we both bowed out at quarterfinal time against the English in 2007.
Yeah.
Would you say it's fair to say we probably had more expectation on us to do well in that World Cup than they had this one?
Yeah, I think we're also, that's what I reckon, that's why we lost by a kick we could have got, but we also had a pretty good pull run, everything was going well.
Yeah, and the squad that we had, like, and yeah. The reaction off the back of it, fucking cold, like polar opposites, you know?
Yeah. Did you get to any other games?
I was at Wales, France.
Okay.
Yeah. Thought maybe we'd talk a little bit more about that, about French being on top, then Vahamina's red card, when our 9 points up, then they lose it. And then Vahamina retiring.
Is that why he's retiring?
Well, he said that he was always thinking he was going to do it anyway, but he's 28.
Yeah.
I mean, he's come out and admitted that he lost his head, but fuck. Mate, I've run into a lot of people over here, like, talking about flog tweets and flog behaviour, like, off the back of the pod.
Mate, I had a random bloke in Bronny come up to me today. He was like, love the pod, mate. It's going great. He patted me on the back and then kept walking.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
You start it.
Okay, Phil, you ready?
Yeah, whenever you're ready, mate.
Brah, brah. I'm just doing my mouth exercises. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Fox Rugby World Cup podcast. In fact, it is episode number 8. Who would have thought when we started that we'd be going this long? Steve, how are you, mate? I'm not obviously next to you. I'm over in Japan. How's things back home without me?
It's been a tough week back home, to be honest, Drew. Episode 8, though. I never thought we'd get here.
Mate, I just can't wait. Look, to our listeners, our loyal listeners, and many of them have jumped on the bandwagon. They've been hearing about the Fox Rugby World Cup podcast and have jumped on in droves in our last episode. So welcome if you're a first-time listener, but also like people like the potato fritzel. If you've been here from the start, thank you.
He really is the heart and soul, isn't he, old Fritz?
He's the glue. He's the glue. Yeah. He's holding us together and he's making us stay strong and move forward.
But do you want to give people a bit of an update on the numbers, though, Drew, just while we're there? And we're not the type to rub it in, but I think it's worthy to let people know where our podcast is sitting in comparison to Doran, Worthington and McArdle's one.
Yeah, well, that's right. You know, a lot of those guys base a lot of what they do on fact, and you can't deny the facts. And the facts are, I think they averaged somewhere, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, between 800 and 1,200 listeners per episode.
Yep, correct.
You've probably got the facts there being in Sydney. How many numbers did we hit last week?
I think as of a couple of days ago, we were about 92,000 and climbing. And we're in the numbers game. We don't like to be smug, but numbers don't lie. So it's been a dramatic rise.
It has. And we've only got our listeners to thank for that. So to our listeners, thank you.
We'll be back next year, hopefully.
That's not up to us. That's up to the bosses upstairs.
We're still going to talk next year. Depends where whoever listens.
I'm like, we're always talking. Also, I was really quite impressed and somewhat flattered the amount of people that have come up to me in the streets of Tokyo and Oita and Fukuoka where I've been the last week to come up and just sort of give us a bit of a pat on the back for the podcast, but also encourage us to call out the flogs out there, the flogs of the world that are flog tweeting and some flog behaviour. So that's going to happen at the back end again with our favourite segment, the podcast interaction segment. Looking forward to that always.
Hey, Drew, just quickly, how has Japan been? Like we've heard so much about. I got up there for a day throughout the pool games, but you've had a week there now almost. Has it been as good as it? Besides, you know, let's forget the Aussies result. Like, has it been a good World Cup from a spectator's point of view?
Oh, mate, it's been fantastic. I I went out. I went to the Australia versus England quarterfinal as well as the Wales versus France. So I got two good games in, and had to catch. I was staying in Fukuoka, which is about 2 hours out of Oita, and got on a bus into the stadium. It was a great stadium. It was in a dome, but the atmosphere within that dome was just fantastic. And both teams were really well supported. A lot of the neutral supporters just got right behind the game. And you know, when I first got here, Japan were obviously still in it. They were playing against South Africa in the quarterfinal. And over the course of the weekend, you could just feel a real buzz around all the cities and just the amount of people that are over here. Everyone's on tours. Everyone's, you know, also traveling on their own. And, you know, everyone's in rugby regalia and representing their obviously their first choice team, but also then picking another team if they're a neutral supporter. So everyone's right behind. The locals are just fantastic hosts. I mean, they've gone above and beyond. Every given opportunity, there are people there to help you and to steer you in the right direction. And, you know, I think, I know the difference to me is when you need directions here, like they'll walk 10 minutes out of your time to walk you to where you need to get to. Whereas in Australia, we just sort of go, look, go left and then right, then another few hundred metres, go left again. Like, you know, we'll kind of give a roundabout type of description of where to go, whereas the Japanese almost, they'll become your tour guides for the next 10 minutes, no matter how much it puts them out of their own day-to-day life. But
it's almost stalker-like behaviour from the Japanese, isn't it?
Well, your words. I would have probably chosen other words, but...
Stage five clinger, mate, not stalker.
Yeah. but, I mean, it's been great. The atmosphere at the grounds, the two games I got to, Wales versus France and Australia versus England, were both in the dome in Oita. So the atmosphere within the side of that dome was just absolutely phenomenal. And both games had their moments, which got everyone up on their feet. And, you know, especially that Wales versus France game, the turning points, which we'll get into in that game, really had everyone fixated on the game. And then, you know, I experienced a little bit of heartbreak with that Australian-England game. But I changed my plans, didn't head back to Fukuoka the night that our boys lost, and I crashed with Matt Giddo in his hotel in Oita, so I didn't have to worry about the two-hour bus trip back to Fukuoka, but then again back the next day. So I did everything I could to make sure I didn't remember that result. And
how's that work for you? You're hearing much of it? There's plenty of it back here.
Yeah, look, I understand there's a lot of chat, and you know, there's a lot of chat about Michael Checker and about relationships with Michael Checker and Raylene Castle and Cameron Klein and the like. Like, we're not – well, I mean, I certainly don't want to jump into that. I think, you know, everyone's throwing their two bob in without actually giving two bob, because if we had two bob, two actual dollars for everyone's two bob worth, Rugby Australia's finance would be looking pretty good. So I just think we're not privy to all the information at hand. I think we've got to trust that they put the right measures in to do the right process and the right review and all the rest of it, because I think we can all agree, and I think the players and coaches alike have also said that it's not been good enough, and we just need to do whatever it takes to turn it around. And I don't think us having an opinion on relationships or whatever else is really going to help come to an outcome.
Yeah, we're the fun cast, mate. We don't want to go into it too deeply, so... My only thoughts are, we always talk about who we're going to get in to replace someone to fix the problem. I don't know if we actually ever spend enough time admitting to what the actual problems were that put us in this situation. So you don't want to talk too long about it. But if you look at the Super Rugby performances over the last 4 years and, you know, the popularity of that competition and the lack of performance from the Australian sides, I think it's all contributed to where the Wallabies are at now. So it's irrelevant, in my opinion, who takes over the Wallabies, if CEOs stay, if chairmen stay or go. I think those things need to be fixed before we can actually look at trying to solve the problem. So we'll probably touch on a little bit more in the tweets as well, because although we are the fun cast, there is a lot of tweets about that over the weekend, and we'll probably have to touch on that and then also call a few flogs out as well, but we'll get through that a little bit later. But we're going to try and do a quick recap of the quarterfinals. So you've touched on the Wales-France game, Drew. What about the All Black versus Ireland game? A lot of people thought that Ireland could get it done, but they weren't up for it all, were they?
No, look, to be honest, I was pretty confident in New Zealand going into that game. Bundy Aki getting suspended for Ireland was a big one. Also, just thought they didn't look like they had another gear in them like New Zealand have throughout the course of this World Cup. And there have been times where New Zealand have probably been put under a little bit of pressure, but never for prolonged periods of time. And it just, to me, it looked like Ireland weren't the team that were going to be able to do that. And, you know, I think the result in the end was probably, you know, typified where both teams are at in this competition. And I think Ireland, 18 months, two years ago, were looking really strong, but in that period of time, probably haven't really kicked on with their play. So I think bowing out the quarterfinals is probably a fair summation of where they're at.
I'll tell you what I did find interesting was the, you know, Joe Schmidt in a similar position. He was resigning, or he had resigned prior to this World Cup. You knew that Rory Best was retiring. You saw a lot of Irish fans still showing a huge amount of respect and applause towards their countrymen, and I thought that was really nice. And it got me sort of thinking why Australia has been a little bit the opposite. I just think the uncertainty, you know, like it would have, there's been so much uncertainty over the future of a coach in Australian rugby. But Ireland, they underperformed more than any other side in the World Cup. But the nation seems okay with it. Like, they're still happy that Joe Schmidt, for his time, they're thankful of what he's done to the game in Ireland, and just the contrast in how the behaviour from the fans, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, I guess the Australians' point of view, it's probably been disappointing because we haven't really got any of those trophies for a long period of time. And, you know, we haven't won the Bledisloe in, you know, since before the two of us started. And rugby championship trophies have been few and far between, and World Cups as well. And also, I think, you know, unfortunately for our game as well, we've been in the press for all the wrong reasons. There's been a lot to be frustrated about and unsure about. And I guess, you know, if you want to go down that path, to be negative about as well. So, you know, I think it's maybe just getting to a point where our supporters are just, you know, immensely frustrated and want to see change. And, you know, and it's like anything, and we'll talk about this game soon. People like to I don't know, put it on, like, to make someone responsible. And I'm sure we'll talk about that. Well, that might lead us into our next one, Steve, Wales versus France.
Yeah, well, no one had given France a chance, had they? Like, that was what was people that have had any insight into French rugby over the last sort of 10 to 20 years, that scared a few people, the fact that things aren't all that well in camp. And
yeah,
they'll be so disappointed that, like, I hadn't thought much of Wales. I thought they were a safe and a solid and a defensively sound and disciplined side.
Yeah.
I still probably don't think they're – I still probably think they're the least favourite out of the four left to win the World Cup. But
yeah,
to be able to come back from that deficit just shows that they're a really mature side, and you need that at certain times. So certain conditions will favour the Welsh, but the red card, that really hurt, didn't it, for the French? And I thought they were playing really good footy, and – just typical of the French, they couldn't manage to do it for 80 minutes, but it was probably one of the more exciting quarterfinals I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the French came out of the block so well and put the Welsh under huge amounts of pressure right from the get-go. And to be fair, they were 9 points up when Vahamina got the red card, which was an absolute brain explosion. There's no other way to put it. It was a red card every day of the week.
Yes.
There's no arguing that. But then that was the turning point, clearly. That was when, you know, Wales would have got a bit of a sniff and thought, you know what, we're in with a chance here. We're 9 points down, having to score at least twice. But now all of a sudden they're up against, you know, a set piece that was a down a man, and he's a big ball carrier. He's a big presence out there, Vahamina. So, that was a huge turning point, and the French just couldn't hang on in the end.
Mm.
I agree, though. I think Wales have probably come up. Well, they'll do it tough against South Africa, I think, this weekend, and they'll probably bow out.
South Africa are a different beast, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, just quickly on that that Wales one as well, Wales-France. What did you make of, firstly, Vahamina retiring at 28 years old off the back of that performance at the World Cup? Did you think the red card had anything to do with it, or do you think it was, like he said, pre-planned?
I'm certain that it was, if it was on his mind prior to the World Cup, and I think a lot of people put so much into it. Everyone who's been to World Cup know that how much you put into it and how much time you dedicate to purely and solely an 8-week campaign if you're really lucky, and everyone's in a different part of their career, but I think you're mentally exhausted after a World Cup, so it probably weighs on the mind of someone. They think, can I get to another one? And if their body's potentially tiring or aging. I thought if a guy like that is thinking about that before a World Cup and something like that and the amount of public criticism he's come under,
yeah,
that would probably lean him towards just saying, I've had enough. I also think that, you know, there's nothing wrong with retiring and coming out of retirement in 6 or 9 months if you feel as though you made the wrong decision. So
yeah,
probably, and I don't know the guy, but I probably think it's an emotional response to what's been a very physical campaign and what's been a very emotional campaign for the French as well.
Yeah. Mate, what about the other bit of controversy off the back of that, the pick with Jaco Pieper on Twitter?
Oh, mate, I'm not normally big on Twitter. I couldn't sit back and watch. Whether you like Jaco Pieper or not as a referee, that is completely irrelevant. I think he's done a good job in a World Cup, but
yeah,
the fact that he hasn't been considered for a semi-final and World Rugby again, how they've come out and said he wasn't considered because of his actions after the game. Like, do you remember a couple of years ago when Eddie Jones was kind of near harassed from some supporters getting on the train up in Scotland? Like, people don't understand that Jaco Pieper wouldn't have sought or gone and harassed or chased down 7 or 8 Welsh fans to get a photo. They would have gone to him. They would most probably would have been half pissed, good on him, having a bit of fun. And all Jaco's doing is having a bit of fun with them back.
Yeah.
I just think the world we live in at the moment, like, for God's sakes, let a bloke have a personality, let a player, let a referee, let him enjoy the World Cup for what it is. There's no disputing that was a red card. There was no bias towards the Welsh on that occasion.
Yeah.
For that to rule him out, you've got to understand that this is his World Cup as well. Like, he's trying to play in a quarterfinal, semi-final, a final.
Yeah.
Just think it's an overreaction of the highest order from World Rugby, but we've come to expect that from those clowns in the last sort of 6 weeks.
Yeah, I just think, you know what, we talk about referees, you know, a lot. They're as much a part of the game as what our players are. So I just think we need to hold the referees and the players to the same standard. I don't think if a player went out there, say, for example, there was a Welsh player and had too many that night and did it, like, he's not going to be stood down for it. Sure, it doesn't look great, but he's not going to get stood down for it. And, you know, I've said we need to hold the rest of the same standards as players by putting them up in a press conference. But I also think it's the same way. Jaco here, I think, is the uproar on the socials and public and all the rest of it has worked against him and meant that he's now been cost a potential semi-final. We don't know if he was actually going to get it, but the fact that they've stood him down and not even given him a flag, at least, would indicate that this has worked against him. And, yeah, I agree. I think it's a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to what has been probably an overreaction on the socials, and like, the guy showed a bit of personality, good on him. Like, he's getting involved in the World Cup, everything that the World Cup brings by getting involved with, you know, and enjoying and interacting with people and touring fans from all around the world. And I thought that was a bit disappointing. But
just imagine the paranoia that'll go on for the referees now in years to come because of that. Like, they're out and about, they're there for 8 weeks, you know. Like, you got to remember that players go over there in teams with 30 of their mates and staff with another 10. They're in a squad of 40. They're travelling around together, having the time of their life. Like, referees are essentially individual athletes thrown together in a semi-little team with other referees, but you're competing against those refs. So, like, I just find that the guys got to have some downtime. They got allowed to have some fun too. And unfortunately, the fun police have killed that off again. But anyway, we'll move on. One more quarterfinal to cover. South Africa, Japan. There was always a little bit of hope that the Japanese could create another miracle. And because they'd beaten South Africa 4 years ago, you knew that there were some players on the field that had done that. But it was just one task too far for the Japanese. Although they went out in good style, didn't they? They were still a great team to watch.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they play such a great brand of rugby. And, you know, we talk about the precision of the kicking games from some of the teams up north and the pressure that they put on you from territory and other, you know, I guess, scoreboard pressure points of view. But the Japanese, the pressure they put on you with the speed of ball, the way that they shipped it from the source as soon as it's available, every player plays up-tempo. They like to play at a high speed, but they can really control that as well at times. And they play a really exciting game of rugby, but I just thought that game was probably one too much for them. And emotionally, they probably played their grand final the week before.
Yeah.
And also, they just came up against a very good South African side who I think will probably go in a canter to the World Cup final. So there's no shame on the Japanese bowing out to a really strong South African team.
We also had a really – you mentioned, like, they had an a really tough pool. They'd won three games, but they still weren't even guaranteed to make the quarterfinals. So they were on a nice edge the whole time. Round one was against Russia, good win. Then they beat Ireland, massive win. Then they come up against Samoa, who, you know, before the World Cup, you'd probably say that's an even game. And then they've got to go and beat Scotland in another sort of 80-minute performance to get there. So, yeah, the mental energy that they would have gone through would have been as much as the physical exertion, because they play at such a fast pace. And they probably, like a lot of the teams that, you know, besides the top four in the world, they probably still don't have 31 world-class players. They've probably got 26 maybe. So it wasn't a huge amount of squad rotation. So they were using a lot of their best players to get into the stage, and that would have been tough. Well, South Africa had the luxury of being able to get good rotation in the 3 weeks leading up to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that pretty much wraps up the quarterfinals, makes out the two pretty exciting semifinals, which we'll do our predictions after we wrap up our favourite segment. Should we jump
into the tweets segment? Now, do we?
Get into the tweets?
Okay, yeah, well, I'll read the first one out. There's a lot, but this is from Kangaroo Haha. And so it's a nice, simple question for you, fellas. Since Cech's appointment, what has improved most in Australian rugby, e.g. depth, attitude, fewer dickheads, perhaps? Over to you, Drew.
I think that's a tough one to go like real deep and have my real honest answer, just thinking off the cuff. But
do you want me to go? You can think?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I think we've finally got a scrum and a line-out that is up there with the best in the world. We've got a driving maul that was getting up there with the quality of the Brumbies in Super Rugby. So I thought that really improved. I also thought our general attacking philosophy in the last 12 months has looked better. I don't think there's question marks over our attack. It was probably some tactics in our territory game that has been come under fire. But, yeah, I think you only have to look in that playing squad in terms of fewer dickheads and stuff. You're always going to have different type of personalities in a squad, but you've got a lot of guys there who are all now hurting because I think they all generally believe they could have gone on a lot further than they did. So, and all that sort of depth, well, yeah, that's too long conversation. But good question, Kangaroo, haha.
Yeah, I agree. I think the one thing he's really instilled in the players is belief in themselves, belief in each other, and belief in the cause as well. So, we've heard a little bit of chat from Michael Checker. I understand he had like a written open apology, and also players that are often playing like they're truly hurting. They understand and appreciate the expectation of all of our supporters, and I think just the belief and the attitude that Cech's been able to instill in them has been fantastic. And like you say, the mindset in which the way they want to play, I think, is the right direction. And obviously there's always going to be refinements and slight tinkers with some of the tactical stuff. But I think there's been a lot more positive that's come in his tenure than negative. And I said it publicly. I think he's the best coach I've had and certainly the one that I wanted to play for the most. So,
I'm the same. If you're lucky enough to play for him, and it's not being rude to people that haven't been able to play under him, but it all makes a lot of sense when you get to play under a guy like that. But at the moment, they're copping heat, and they probably deserve to cop some heat. But there has been some improvements in a fair few areas, but it's very hard to see that when you knock out in quarterfinal stage.
Yeah. All right, I've got one from this is Chai Lee. Of the four remaining teams, which country has the best local alcohol? And does that factor into whom you want to win the comp from here?
Best local alcohol? Well, no, it's very difficult. Okay, so you got the Welsh versus South Africa. South Africa's got some of the best vineyards in the world, and the Welsh, well, they love the piss if it's 8 a.m. or 8 p.m. So, and then you look at New Zealand, England.
It's Stein Lager versus warm beer, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd probably go if I'm there. I'd probably go South Africa. That's probably the place I'd most enjoy having a beer is South Africa over any of those other places because weather comes in.
The wine's good in South Africa. The Red Heart Rum, the Windhoek Lager, the Savannah Dry Cider. I think South Africa in an absolute canter.
Yeah, take it easy, Drew. You're sort of showing your weakness there, mate. You've just named about 40 different alcohol brands. You're thirsty, mate. Okay, I got one. This is from Beth Leek.
or Benfic, Benfic, I don't know, BN, yeah, don't matter. Is there any possibility of Israel Folau returning to rugby, and what would this need? Oh, I'm not even going to finish it, Drew.
Yeah, we're not going there.
We're not going there. It's a flawed question.
Yeah,
we're not doing Israel Folau.
Okay, Hunter Zacka, who had been your team of the tournament so far? I think, look, that's we're not going to list 15 players. Like, we appreciate your question, but that's essentially 15 questions, Hunter.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Or 23, because let's not forget the finishes.
Yeah,
well, Send us an email, mate. Send us an email, champ.
If you want more extensive coverage, of course, tune into Fox Sports. But otherwise, you know, this is just a fun cast, mate. We don't want to have everyone on here for 2 hours.
Yeah. The Jacko Piper elbow to the fans, we've gone through that. So that's Ewan Watt. We've answered that one already, mate. What about this from Tim Felton? Who is the quietest bloke normally yet turned into a lunatic when they're on the sauce? Good question. Okay, who is a Jacqueline Hyde? There's a few of them. You got anyone, Drew? Well, Stephen Larkham comes to mind because he was...
Yeah, it's all the ones where they've got alter egos, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, Bernie Larkham has Barney Lurkham. Barney Lurkham is, you know, very, very obnoxious and aggressive and probably similar to Tom Horan, who's a very good friend with Tim Horan. So there's a couple for you, mate. If there's anyone else we might have forgotten.
Mate, I'm still waiting for your alter ego to come out at some point, Steve.
Yeah, like that's why I'm not very good on the hit and miss, Drew. That's kind of why I keep that to a minimum. But
I feel like you've got real potential to be like the name, the go-to to this.
Yeah. Like there's a lot of nudity when I was in the sort of 17 to 20 year old years of my life, and that's probably why I don't drink a huge amount. No one needs to see that anymore.
Tell you what, just quickly on the nudity, I went to an onsen over here.
How'd you go?
Oh, mate, I walked out like I was walking around like a peacock in there.
Yeah, it's a bit like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good for the ego. I was just like, how good's this? Got you covered.
Yeah. Next.
Okay, next question, Steve Doyle. From all the Wallabies you have played with, who's your go-to man to anchor a boat race?
Best one I've seen, I played club footy with him, he's a Wallaby, was Warwick War. It helps when he's about 6'10" and 130 kilos, but it was like he just threw a schooner over his shoulder. It was remarkable. What about you, Drew?
The ones that can open the gullet are just
like gifted.
I'm in awe of them. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I think just going to the big boys. The big boys can. Nathan Sharp actually. He used to do this this tripod, three breezes in it in his mouth at the same time, with the straws, and it was gone in like 2 seconds. Or a jug scull. The guy could scull a jug like back in my uni days, UQ, when we were playing first grade, he was a great anchor.
A jug scullard, yeah. I've seen a couple of Warwick do a jug before. It's impressive stuff. This is from Michael Cole. When you arrive home from such a long tour, do you usually spend a lot of time away from other players before you go back to training, or do you still hang out? What about you, Drew? Each to your own, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. I think everyone, it's different each time you come back. Some players have booked holidays to go away. I don't think anyone necessarily would have had anything booked in the first 2 weeks. If they are going away, it would all be last minute because of obviously they'd be hoping to go much deeper. But other players are looking to move houses, move countries, whatever. It's just sometimes you want to get as far away from everyone as possible. And it also depends on where the location which you will live. Some of the guys are going back to their houses in Melbourne, but they might not be from there. So the only network that they have is the rugby network. So it's all very dependent on where you are locally and where your friendship network is.
Yep. Yeah, I think after a trip like this, most guys, because of how they bowed out, I reckon they're probably getting home, phoning off and having some quiet time. But the reality of being a professional footy player, that can only happen for a few weeks. You've got to try and do a little bit more because the season starts in a few months' time. And because of how they finish, they want to start in a good performance next year.
Yeah. I've got one here from Jason Ross. Drew Horsey, fun cast peeps, coming into big matches, how do you keep the nerves calm in the week, day of, warm-up, etc.? Staying focused versus overthinking it.
We've spoken about this a few times. You had your own wager. I was probably a bit similar to you. I didn't get too pumped up. I always like to have a bit of fun, and there was always a few guys in the team that were pretty happy to have some fun, but you did also realise there were some other guys that, yeah, for obvious reasons, were pretty serious and got pretty pumped up, and you just had to make sure it didn't distract those guys. So I wasn't a huge worry about a game of footy. I got more nervous when I sat on the bench, but then as I got older, I got calmer with that. So
I just didn't think too much about footy. I probably
is that because when you got older, you got more used to it.
Yeah, no, honestly, like I reckon I'm a big fan of having more senior players on the bench because I reckon they can handle it. They're a little bit more comfortable with how they play. But I just also think like I made sure like some stage at the end of the big session throughout the week, once the learning was all done, I just had to jot down a few things like line out plays and stuff like that. And once I knew that, I'd written that down. I was comfortable. I'd muck around and relax and I'd kick a footy the day before a game. Same as you were the most relaxed person until it all hit you and you had to duck off to the toilet for a spew.
Well, that's it. I think during training, then you've just got to, when you're at training or you're in meetings or you're doing analysis, you're absolutely on so that you've got the preparation down to a T and you know exactly what your role is and you're confident that you know your role. So you're not going to get presented with a picture out in the field that you haven't considered at least. And then when you're away from footy or away from training or whatever, you get away from it and you get that balance because, you know, as we know, life is all about balance. If you don't seek that, even in a week of a professional game or a quarter final or whatever of Rugby World Cup, it's not going to go well for you. So you've just got to seek that balance, but also trust that you've done the preparation and leave it all to the last minute to think about and have a spew. That's how I went about it.
Excellent. Okay, this is from Donut Philosophy. I don't think we can answer this, but it's a question. If there's an Aussie team to be cut from Super Rugby, who should go? We don't want to go down here, but this path, do we?
No. I think that's flog tweet.
Yeah, flog tweet of the week so far, Donut Philosophy. We won't go there. What do you got, Drew?
If you could be any rugby player in the world, who would you be?
Oh, I reckon I'd be someone with, like, just ridiculous speed, you know? So I look at maybe Cheslin Kolbe. Just, I don't know, I've always loved the fact that guys like Jason Robertson, Cheslin Kolbe could just... You know, I've always admired the guys that were always at some stage probably told they were too small, but they proved everyone wrong and went out and become close to the best player in the world. What about you?
Mate, I was pretty happy with myself, so I'm just going to stay with myself.
That's a flog response, Drew. Okay. Who would you want, mate? This is from Patrick Herworth. Who would you want as next Wallaby coach? I'd like them to really consider an Australian, but we've also got to get the best coach for the job. And as I said before, we don't know who the best coach is because the same coach is going to inherit the same problems we've had for a long time. So let's fix all those before we worry about who's coaching us.
Yeah. Who are you backing to win now?
Oh, it's really hard to go against New Zealand. I didn't think they were the side they were in 2015, but they've proved us all wrong. I'm going to actually – I hope anyone but New Zealand wins, and that's not because, you know, I don't want to be anti-New Zealand. I just think for the world game or for the game to grow – globally, and I think it'll be good if someone else won it, but it's going to be hard. They're just looking so good at the moment, the OBs.
I think if any team is in, like, who are left that can do it, I think South Africa can do it, so I'm going to back the Springboks.
Yep, there you go. Good stuff. That was the next question. Who are you backing to win now? That was from John Beddo, but we've already answered that. This is one from Charles McGilvray. How do England beat the Kiwis? What about how do they do it, Drew?
It sounds simple, right? But you've just got to have them under pressure for longer periods of time. Every time they seem to be able to weather pressure for a long time, and then the moment you take that foot off, their transitional play and their turnover attack is, you know, it's better than anyone. So if you give them too many of those opportunities where you take the pressure off and you give them a sniff, then they'll run the length or they'll run 50 meters and score a try, and then straight away they've just shifted that momentum back on top of you. So I think if you can sort of strangle them and just start.
I think he will have a game plan, though. If anyone is going to have a game plan to beat them, it's going to be Eddie Jones.
Yeah.
He's done it before. I think England are in a good place. They're playing really well. And they'll have a specific game plan to beat New Zealand as they did to beat Australia. So it'll be a great game.
Yeah, it will be a great game. Okay, this one from Glenn Phillips.
Glenn.
I don't know if that's Glenn or Glenn.
Glenn, yeah, Glenn.
It's with a Y. Will rugby goggles reverse beer goggles, thereby providing unfair advantage post-game activities?
Will rugby goggles reverse beer goggles?
I don't think you can go out with Artie Savia's goggles. And
I don't think they're working, to be honest. Artie can't keep them on for longer than 5 minutes.
Yeah, but, I mean, even still, maybe that's the market then, post-game activities, but...
Yeah.
I don't think Well, beer goggles essentially make you see things differently, perceive things differently than perhaps they are. Is that probably the right way of describing beer goggles? Not the fact that you just get drunk. It's just that you start to see things differently.
Yeah. Yeah. Shallow how. Classic shallow how.
I've
got a good
question,
one here,
though.
This is from Jack. This is, says, Drew, which current wallaby back do you reckon you could beat in 100 metres?
Actually, you know what? There's a tweet somewhere. I don't know who I could beat, but the other night when I was in Fukuoka, I was at a bar and a podcast listener came up and I don't know, we had a drink, and then I think I beat him on Pepsi, Scissors, Rock, and he bought me a couple of shots. And then he challenged me to a race.
How'd you go?
Well, we lined up. We went into the little laneway, cleared the road for about probably 80 metres. Went down to a three-point start, let him make the call, ready, set, go. And, mate, I beat him in an absolute canter.
Did you?
Yeah. Like, I got out early. As soon as I knew I had his measure, I just teased him. I was Usain Bolt with my arms out wide, looking back at him with high knees, running over.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, you showed him, Drew. I got a good one here from this is from Dave Hawkins, 85. Have you ever had funny term with pre-match supplements? I once doubled the suggested dose of caffeine, went for a wee and thought my eye was going into spasm. Turns out it was just the flickering light and I was totally fine. I'm glad you're right, Dave. It's a good tweet. Jack Potkeeter was an interesting one. He would basically take triple the amount of the caffeine, and you saw from his performances, it was like he was going into a fit of rage, and it worked for him. But no, I was never big on the pre-match supplements. I didn't want the guts or the mind to get all edgy, so I was a bit all natural.
I had one once, Stephen. It was towards the back end where different, I don't know, supplements came into play, and we used to drink beetroot extract to,
I remember those,
to stop cramps or oxygen or whatever. And anyway, pre-game, I'm going to the urinal to do a wee, and I've got a tinge of red in my piss, and I'm like, oh, this isn't good. But so I quickly just I squeezed it so I didn't show anyone else at the urinal that I've got blood coming out.
Yeah.
So I went into from the urinal into the cubicle. I thought might sit down here and just maybe get the little nervous poos out as well.
Yeah.
Wipe that. Bloody red in that as well. I'm like, oh, I'm dying.
Put you on death's door, went out and had the game of your life, did you?
Mate, I'm going out just a bit. I'm thinking, shit, do I say something now? Because I'm going out to a test match thinking I'm dying, like I'm bleeding from every orifice. And so I pulled the doc aside and said, Doc, I think there's something really wrong. I'm bleeding, blah, blah, blah. And then we put it down to it was just the beetroot extract coming out of me.
Oh, there you go.
But, mate, I'd never been more worried going into a test.
As you'd imagine, that's pretty fair. So you're throwing up, and then as you normally do, and then you're weaning and pooing blood. Well done.
Yeah. Oh, mate, it was the worst. Okay, we've got another one here. Were you filmed? This is from Q96. Were you filmed with teams that were spied on? Oh, sorry, were you involved with teams that were spied on or filmed, except for, like Eddie said, about the English training session? Who knows?
Well, we always used to get worried in South Africa that at captain's runs, but it got to the stage we didn't care. Like it was, as Eddie said the other day, teams see enough of everyone this day and age. So I just think it's a bit of a sideshow. It's exactly what they want us to talk about. They want us to talk about that and not England's tactics. That's what Eddie loves. So it's worked.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, this one, Harrison from Harrison Dale. Where is the best place for beer in Tokyo after the semis and finals? Surely we can drag the Aussies into one era. Well, listen, I'll tell you, Harrison, if one guy's going to find it, it's going to be Drew Mitchell. So where will you be after the semi-final, Drew?
Guys, I feel like the little bar areas like Golden Guy or Shinjuku, there's a place called Memory Lane with like many little bars in there. So just I'll be probably wandering around one of those little alleyways and just sneaking into a little dark corner and getting pretty rowdy, I'd say.
Okay, excellent. We've got heaps of tweets to get through, hey?
Yeah. We'll skim through them because, we obviously don't want to keep everyone up all night.
Yeah.
Okay, you go. This one, Tim Felton. Will Ben Skeen get player of the tournament?
Probably. You've had enough to say on Ben Skeen. Let's not waste another breath. It is from Nathan Mann, the best host of Canapé Session. So we used to be able to do Kangaroo Courts. They've been banned. We now have the odd Canapé Session. Who was the best host you ever had, Drew?
I'd say Kirtley Beale. One time in Clearwater Resort in Christchurch. We're there for Super Rugby. We had mini teams because you're in like a service departments at that golf resort. So you'd go into your mini team and you'd host the course of the meal and you'd move throughout the resort for the full meal. And Curtly Beale had the canapes, but he thought it was canopies. And I think we got chicken nuggets or something from KFC for canopies and Curtly Beale.
Dunstripe is a brilliant cook.
No, he's got a good potato bake. I've got to give him that. He's got a pretty good potato bake.
Man.
Okay, I've got one. Tom Murphy, out of 10, how hungover were you on Saturday?
Drew, how that question's aimed at you.
I was probably 9.5, but I backed up, went again.
That's good. That's strong. Hey, guess who the next one's from?
Who?
The Fritz, potato.
The Fritz.
What celebrities were you surprised to meet seeing during the gentlemen's game at the World Cup? What celebrities you seen, Drew?
I haven't run into any, but I've seen that Prince Charles just presented one of the Welsh boys his cap at training yesterday.
Yep.
So, that's pretty big. Bit of royalty.
Okay, you're pretty tight with Prince Charles, aren't you?
No, well, no, his counterpart over in Monaco.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm actually catching up with him for a beer next week. So
okay. I'll enjoy that. Say hello to the Prince for me.
Could have been a potential guest.
Mm-hmm. Couple more.
Any truth to the rumor Andy Goode is the GOAT from Sean
T? He's a podcast. Yeah, he's got a popular podcast up there. Did well with you last week, didn't he, Drew?
Yeah, he's a good man. But I used to love how he didn't really care about skin folds and he still wore gloves to the end.
Yeah, he was strong with gloves, though. Yeah. I worry about people that wear gloves. I worry about them post-rugby, but...
Yeah, they might go into gardening.
Yeah. Oh, he's a pretty full-on footy one from Frederick's mama. Thoughts on Checker's comments in response to Wallaby's game plan, keep the ball, we'd rather win our way. Listen, a lot of that talk when we, you know, a lot of the stuff about the Wallaby saying we don't look at too much opposition, we're going to... The tactics of the Wallabies were not as bad as everyone's saying. The execution of it, however, was what let the Wallabies down.
Yeah.
That was what was the worst part of it. So, sure, they do run a little bit more than other teams, but he's been in teams that have more success. I just think the tactics were nowhere near as bad as the execution. The execution made it look five times as bad. Like, we couldn't even hit one of our kickoffs. So,
yeah.
I understand people's frustration there, but also, at the same time, the players still have to take responsibility because they didn't execute what was their game plan.
Oh, mate.
And that, you know what? The players will have a chance to buy in and make changes to a game plan throughout the week. It's not like he's a dictator standing up there saying, this is how you're doing it. Like, players are always involved in those conversations.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of times the boys got through them, got behind them with line breaks, Patea was enormous in that first 30 minutes. Curtly Beale, Sammy Crevy. And we just weren't able to convert those into points. And I think the difference that you'll see is New Zealand this weekend, if they get the same opportunities against England, they'll put them, you know, they'll put points on and then it's a different game and all of a sudden England are under pressure. So, that, like you say, the execution was probably the only thing that was setting it apart. I got this one. We'll talk about it, but Tom Boyce, like, it's in the name, mate.
Boyce.
It's the World Cup podcast, the Fox Rugby World Cup podcast. And he's asking us who we think is going to win the NRC Grand Final, Canberra Vikings.
Mr. Boyson, that is, I'll give you a bit of reference to Mr. Boyson. We were delayed on a flight in South Africa for about an hour once because one bloke wouldn't get on the flight. It was this random bloke called Mr. Boyson. We're all sitting there waiting for this clown to get on the flight. And then he finally gets on and Owen Finnegan, being Owen Finnegan, he finally gets on and Owen goes, Mr. Boyson, you're late. So basically anyone who's been a flog for the last 10 years in Brumby Rugby is known as Mr. Boyson. So it kind of fitting that we get a tweet like that from Mr. Boyson.
Here's a good one, Steve. From Simon Chester.
Chester, yep.
Big fan of the show. On death row, last meal. Entree, main, dessert, and beverage of choice.
Oh, okay. Entree, dumplings, main, lamb roast, beverage of choice. I'm going to go a Captain Morgan or a Mount Gay rum with some Coke and lime, Drew.
That's not a bad meal, Steve.
Where are you going?
And maybe I would have entertained that, but I think you should also congratulate me. Yesterday marks a milestone as 100 days since I've eaten any meat.
Jesus, that's very good, Drew.
Thanks, mate. That's, you know, a bit of willpower. Once you commit to something, you can achieve things for all those out there.
I was going to say it was 100 days since you hadn't touched yourself up, but you've been on tour on your own for a while, so that wouldn't
have been. Okay, we'll leave that one alone. I'd have to have maybe a nice little bit of asparagus and then some pesto pasta and then dessert. I'd probably have a fruit salad.
Oh,
But I'd have a full brick of Queensland cocktail, Bundaberg rum.
Yeah, okay.
And a splash of Coke.
All right, let's go a couple more. This is from Lloyd Darmody. Is the Australian rugby media too close to the players, which stops them from being objective? Oh, mate, I think being close to the players and being in the media has its challenges at times, but
yeah,
I think at the same time, you've always got to be honest. We're just as disappointed as everyone else, but we're also sympathetic. That's what people don't get to understand. When you've been in the position that the players have, and we've been there, we've lost this quarterfinal to England in 2007, you know exactly how they felt. They didn't go there to perform like that. So you don't want to, you know, sometimes it's very, very pointless just trying to take pot shots at players when they're out there doing their best. We're as disappointed as anyone, but it's not a good time. We, like most people, we want the game to go well because we're invested in it so heavily. So I don't really know if that answers his question, but
yeah,
that's just the world we live in. You know, we try and be honest, we try and be objective, but maybe we are too close at times. I don't know. What do you think, Drew?
Well, I mean, it is what it is, right? Like, we're employed to do and have a say and an opinion. And I think the thing that everyone needs to remember is you're not going to agree with 100% of what someone says all the time. So,
yeah,
you know, a lot of it is a take it or leave it scenario. Like, there's going to be times where you fully agree with something we say, or sometimes where you think we're flogs. And that's also okay. That's all right. But we're there to give our opinion, and we're giving it from the point of view that we have, which is some of them from quite close inside the camp, some of them not so much. But that's just, yeah, I mean, we can only say what we feel, and then it's up to you to take it or leave it. But I think we should probably wrap up the tweet segment there, Steve. I think it's been overwhelmed by the response, and we really thank you for your interaction. And and I think we also thank them for even the flog tweets, because that's...
Oh, we wouldn't be the same without the flog tweets. And then, you know, I think we've made people like Potato Fritzel better. He's finally got questions that aren't flog tweets, and that wouldn't happen without 8 weeks of being called out as a flog. So, you know, we've helped people improve in many aspects of life, which I'm probably most pleased about.
Mate, that's what we're here to help with, right, is development of the human. So
we're happy that we can provide that. Drew, hey. Preview of those. Who's going to win them?
Yeah, okay, the prediction. So New Zealand versus England... I mean, for me, I think New Zealand will win it. It'll be a tightly contested game, but New Zealand just look like they've got another gear and they can find it when they need to.
Okay, well, I think New Zealand will win, but I'm also actually going to go for an upset here. I'm going to go England to beat them by 5, and I'm going to go England will host South Africa in the World Cup final. South Africa will trounce Wales by, I reckon, 15+.
Yeah, I think it'll be a pretty big score there as well. South Africa will do that one in a bit of a canter, go in reasonably fresh against New Zealand. And you're tipping South Africa England, much like 2007.
I kind of went with that early in the World Cup, and I think that was my sort of 2 finalists besides Australia. So I'm going to stick with that. Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Well, mate, it's been great.
It has, hasn't it? I've really enjoyed it. It's been very good. 8 weeks doing this with you, Drew. Let's hope we can do it again sometime, mate.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's not up to us. That's up to the guys upstairs. So, to our bosses, if you're listening, holla.
Yeah, sign the dotted line.
But otherwise, thank you so much to our listeners. Reach out to us, tweet us if you want.
Just stay in touch over the summer. Just every now and then, send us a flog tweet just to let us know you're still there.
Yeah, you're still thinking about us.
Yeah. Righto. Catch you on the other side. Enjoy
Thanks very much. Catch you on the flip side.
See you, buddy. Bye.
See you, mate.